This is WABF, and it's time now for the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou Campomenosi of the Common Sense Campaign, an adjunct professor of political science at Spring Hill College. This program is paid for by Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations on 98 in Daphne and in Malbus on 181 with a state-of-the-art car wash. And good morning, Dr. Lou.
Well, good morning to you, Laurie. Another week of lots of good news to talk about.
Good news.
So, well, I mean, some good, some bad, of course. So that's what I want to talk about today. What's on your mind? What do you want me to talk about?
Normally, it's not good news. I was surprised.
Okay. Well,
we could all use some.
I'll get into the it's a small piece of good news about the bridge, maybe. You know, that's something good that came out of the governor's office for a change. But and there's some decent news about what's going on the educational front, which I'll talk about. But some of the things that I do want to talk about is what good old Governor DeSantis did getting the Yankees up there to go crazy. I mean, and what Abbott's doing to Chicago and New York. We need to talk about those things.
Okay.
So we're going to get into that a little bit. I also want to talk about this whole business of what the special master who is going to oversee the Trump Mar-a-Lago classified information business, okay? I want to talk a little bit about that. Then I would really like to talk about some of the issues pertaining to the real stakes in the election. I mean, I think when you think about it, well, we just have to get the Republicans in there. Yeah, okay, I get that, but why? What's so important about it? And there are issues there beyond just inflation and all like that, which leads me to the next point that I want to talk about, which is the real issues in the election. I mean, in my view, they remain, you know, inflation, the border, and crime. So let's talk a little bit about that. I do want to try to talk a little bit about what's going on with foreign policy in the Russian-Ukrainian war. In some ways, that's good. Here again, Laurie, here's some of your good news.
Okay.
The Ruskies have had their asses handed to them in, bad word. Take that back. In the East and in the South. And so what does this portend for us? And I want to just spend a little bit of time on that, okay? And then back to our state issues, I do want to talk a little bit about an election integrity. And in fact, Secretary of State John Merrill will be speaking tonight at the Common Sense Campaign Planning Committee meeting, 6 o'clock at El Rancho in Daphne. Go to the Common Sense Campaign website and you'll find more information about it. But I do think, you know, election integrity is one of those issues that we need to be paying attention to, okay? Then I do want to talk a little bit about what's going on at the local education level. I spoke at the Board of Education meeting last week about the new Alabama Comprehensive Assessment Program, and the test results are coming in, and I spoke a little bit about that, and I want to just share that with you all so we're thinking about local education. I mean, our people here that run the school system now have a $518 million budget. Translation, folks, that's over half a billion. So with all that money, what are they doing with it? We need to kind of dig into that a little bit. And if I have time, I'll do that today. So let's talk first about what's going on with DeSantis and Abbott and all like that. And my feeling here is that, and again, the various talk shows from the left-wing side of things are just, oh, this is an outrage, it's human rights violation, it could be illegal, blah, blah, blah. The interesting thing about the illegality issue is that Biden was doing the same thing, you know, taking people in the dead of night to various places. No one said a word about that from the left. They loved it. Okay, it was all good. Okay, so the illegality issue seems to be a stretch, all right? The question of inhumanity, you know, the whole thing is inhumane because of what Biden is doing, allowing the border to be crossed just willy-nilly. I mean, and the fact that you've had, what, close to 78 people die just in the month of August, you know, the illegals trying to cross and drowning. You know, we had a National Guard member, you know, from Texas who tried to help another illegal who happened to be a cartel a cartel carrier. I mean, this poor young man dies trying to save someone of that ilk. I'm sorry, but this whole business that the Yankees, you know, they're insulated from all this. They're all sanctuary cities. But boy, I'll tell you, when Abbott starts busing them to New York and to Chicago and to Washington, D.C., they're singing a different tune. And, I mean, sanctuary cities. I mean, they could beat their chests and during the Trump period and say, oh, yeah, this is terrible. He's inhuman. He's caging people. Despite the fact that Obama had them in the cages first, doesn't matter. So, it to my way of thinking, and I mean, you can look at it as a political ploy, and I guess it is a political ploy in a sense, but in another sense, it's a wake-up call for these idiot Democrats who welcome all the sanctuary crap, and the next thing you know, when it's in their doorstep, they're screaming. And the classic example of this is this Martha's Vineyard. I mean, Tucker Carlson made a good point. Martha's Vineyard probably has more open bedroom space than any place in the country because about 100,000 beds are there, and all of the people who come to Martha's Vineyard have already left because the summer season's over. So, I mean, surely you could, if Obama could put big tents up for his big birthday party, why not have a tent city erected to take care of 50 people? But oh no, they brought in the military to escort them out. So, I mean, it is hypocrisy. Tucker Carlson calls it, you know, a caste system with privilege. However you want to look at it, it's instructive that they did not want those folks there, okay? And I think it's important for DeSantis and Abbott and others to keep calling them out. And I think that that is going to continue because DeSantis and Abbott are serious people, and they know that the only way to get the national media's attention, since CNN and all of them don't want to go on to the border and watch what's going to happen, and you know that Kamala Harris doesn't want to touch that, there's no other way to get the attention of what's really going on. And towns like El Paso and Brownsville are overwhelmed with this. I mean, what about their social services? What about their schools? What about their medicals? They don't give two craps about it. And that's the problem, okay? Out of sight, out of mind. But boy, when it gets to, you know, Kamala Harris's own house in Washington, D.C., and, you know, in New York and in Chicago, then they all start going nuts. Good. Let them stew in it, as they should. I hope DeSantis and them just keep it up. And maybe, we'll actually have some action to stem the flow. We'll see. I mean, don't count on it, but sooner or later, these Democrats, and actually it's already happening, the Democrat mayors are squealing. Well, let's see how much they squeal and how hard they squeal. And when Biden starts hearing that squealing and sees it as a possible threat, you know, we'll see. Let's keep our fingers crossed on that one. All right, let's talk about Judge Geary and the Mar-a-Lago business. I think it's important to put this into some perspective with him. He evidently is a FISA judge, and during the whole Russia collusion business, he took a FISA request from the FBI that had been doctored and was full of false information, and he didn't check it, and so he issued, you know, a FISA warrant for the FBI to spy on Carter Page and others within the campaign. Now, it seems to me that him having been burned once by the FBI should lead him to the point where he is going to be very, very demanding in making sure that whatever they're saying happens to be true this time. And so issues of classification, and I think that former CIA director or National Intelligence Director Ratcliffe was saying the other day that he had a document that he declassified that was based on the Steele dossier. Now think with me for a second. The FBI and others classified it top secret, even though they knew that the information was bogus. Now, kind of get your hands around this, or wrap your mind around it, whatever you want to say. They're classifying top secret information that's a falsehood. And so Ratcliffe's argument basically is that when Geary is looking at all this stuff, he has to be very careful about the nature of the classification and the content. And so this may take a bit of time, but my point to you is that if anyone is going to be very careful about making sure the FBI is held to account on this, it could be Geary, because of the fact he got burned by the FBI over a FISA warrant. So we'll see how this thing plays out. But clearly, this is a major, you know, issue, and let's just hope that Geary does the right thing and handles this properly, okay? So, as I said at the beginning, I do want to talk about the stakes of this election. And so you say to yourself, come on, Lou, I mean, everybody knows it's important. Yeah, I get that it's important, okay? But how important is it really? Okay, is it just a matter of let's transfer power to the Republicans because they're the good guys and they'll stop all the craziness? Yeah, I guess we could go down that road, but you know, we've been down that road with them before in 2010 and 2014, gave them the House in 2010, gave them the Senate in 2014. What did they do with it? Absolutely nothing to stop Obama in any respect. Now, we can argue, you know, that, oh, they were afraid of being called racist and all like that. I don't care what you say about why they didn't do anything. They didn't do anything. And so we're left with that legacy as we're hoping after hope that we win in November, the Republicans take power in both houses, Senate and House, and they do the right thing. Okay, so let's talk about what that right thing actually kind of looks like, all right? One of the things that I would argue is critical is stopping the left's power grab. Okay, so how are we going to implement that? How are we going to do this? In part, we can begin by cutting off funding to all these left-wing groups that are doing things that are inimical to this country's well-being. So that's for starters. We have got to stop this movement towards socialism, and we can do it with funding. I would argue that restoring the border is another critical aspect of the stakes. And you say, okay, well, how can we do that? Biden's in charge. Well, yes, he is in charge, but there are lawsuits that can be done. There are investigations that can be taken care of. And, the I word, we can impeach him. Okay? Lori's looking askance.
I saw a Tucker Carlson article over the weekend about Senator or Congresswoman that was going to introduce impeachment today.
Right. Okay. I think she was doing that for different reasons, but the point is, if you look carefully, he has just completely gone against the law that covers immigration. I mean, you don't have to go any further than that. So, I mean, I think that would be another aspect of this. But, you know, the other part of it, too, though, is to restore funding that he's cut. He and the Democrats have cut to ICE and other aspects of the border the whole HHS approach. So I think that that's another element that's there in terms of the stakes of the election, getting control of the border. It's true that Biden can continue to try to subvert it, but on the one hand, we can certainly try to impeach him on it, but we can also fund the people who need to do the job. And I think that linked to that is to support what the border states can do. And again, arguments have been made that this is an invasion and that they have the constitutional right to stop an invasion, okay? It may not be tanks and F-15s, to use Biden's phrase, but invasions, as we're seeing, are invasions, no matter how you want to define it. So it seems to me that that's just another aspect of restoring the border. Now think about this. I mean, so restoring the border entails, too, cutting off the damn fentanyl. I mean, it's killed close to 100,000 people, 70,000 of whom are young people. I mean, if the Chinese had any better motive is to, you know, than to try to hurt the American population, well, here it is. This is what they're doing. And the Mexican cartels are now, you know, probably almost as productive in terms of fentanyl as China is. So you've got a major issue on our southern border that if this border isn't closed in some manner, more Americans are going to die. Aside from the fact that more terrorists have been coming in, I think they have at least 58, if I'm not mistaken, that have been identified on the terror watch list that have crossed, and they've caught them. Well, what about the whole 600,000 people that they are just getaways? No one knows who the hell they are. Okay? So, I mean, there is a practical crime problem here. These people who are coming in unvetted have, you know, whether it's vetted for their backgrounds in terms of criminals or whatever, or whether they've got COVID. Oh, no, it doesn't matter. Just let them walk across. It has an impact on all of our country. I mean, someone made the point. Every city in the United States is now a border city. And DeSantis and Abbott are going to make damn sure these Yankee cities get their dose of it. And they better keep doing it. The hell with all this crap. You know, this, you know, pounding their chest and all this great, you know, virtue signaling. Oh, we're better than those damn southern, you know, hypocrite Dixie guys. Really? Really? Okay. We'll see.
He showed them.
Yeah, we are. So, I mean, here again, just restoring the border. That's the second of these stakes involved. The third one that I think is that checking this out of control spending. Okay? I mean, clearly, if you're going to stop inflation, you've got to get some control on the spending. Okay? We all understand that. So, will the Republicans have enough will to do that? Because as soon as they get into power, the Democrats are going to start wailing about, you know, they're cutting this, they're cutting that, they're taking away grandma's Medicaid or Medicare and all the rest of it, okay? Taking away the kids' lunches. I mean, they're good at doing that, and the Republicans are scared to death of it. And so when you talk about budget hawking, you know, where are the budget hawks? You know, one of them is Mo Brooks, but of course Mo is going out the door. So hopefully Mo will leave a legacy up there within the conservative coalition, the Freedom Caucus, to be vigilant about this and do what's necessary. We'll see. Okay? So here again we get into this whole question then about what it is, what are the stakes? And I think those stakes are extremely high. So we better win. So what are we going to win on? Well, I mean, inflation is the number one issue. According to recent polling across the board, inflation remains high. It went down from 8.5 in July to 8.3. That wasn't good news for Biden and them. And the biggest reason it was only at 8.3 was because gas prices came down. Core inflation remains at a high level. My hope is that the gas prices are going to shoot up to $5. I don't care if we have to pay $5 for a gasoline down here. I want it to be painful. Okay, Lenin was right. The worse it gets, the better for us as far as the Bolsheviks were concerned in 1917. That remains true today. Biden can't deal with the gas going back up. Of course, the way he's handling this is to pump, you know, more oil into the system through the strategic reserve. I understand that he sent 1 million barrels over to China. Now, can you believe this?
That's what the impeachment was about.
You're right. That's what Marjorie Taylor Greene over in Georgia, who they hate.
And apparently Biden's son had an investment,
exactly.
The organization,
right, the quid
company.
Pro quo with those people. Okay. So what's new? I mean, you know, last week Deke was on and we were talking about the compromising of American leaders by the Chinese. Okay. It's an ongoing issue. We see it at the top, and we may very well have spies and all the rest of this throughout the bureaucracy. I mean, it is a major issue. So, I mean, when you talk about the issues to run on, inflation, crime, the border, I mean, these things make sense. We should be able to win on that, okay? So, I mean, when you think about those kinds of issues, I think it seems to be very realistic to expect that we are going to do quite well, okay? Now, what the Republicans do with whatever they get out of this, if they get both houses, remains to be seen, you know? And there's the MAGA presence, and then there's the antipathy for MAGA and what it means, particularly with Mitch McConnell. And if he's going to go down this road of, you know, isolating the MAGAs, making us the bad guys, agreeing with Biden that we are enemies of the state, then the Republican Party is going to be in big trouble, in my view. All right. So let's talk about something else now. This whole question about foreign policy, you know, Lori wanted to know what was the good news that I had. All right. So the Ukrainians are kicking some Ruski ass. That is damn good news. I mean, amen.
Okay.
Let's go
yes.
after it. Okay. Now, here is the possible problem with this, okay? As the Ruskis have to deal with losses, and as Putin has to deal with more problems, what are his solutions going to be? Is he going to send more troops from his regular army? I mean, my understanding is he's pretty well stretched right now. They've upped the limits people to sign up to 60 years old, so they're drafting old people to go to the front. All right, not a good sign. But what happens if Putin, in desperation? Now, in fact, it was interesting. Last week, 18, let's put it in our terms, 18 mayors from different municipalities signed a petition that basically said Putin should resign. Now, these guys are stepping out there because, I mean, Putin does not put up with anyone who is going to cross him. I mean, he's already killed his opposition before, and he tried to kill another opponent that is still in jail. My point being, if he becomes desperate, and he's threatened to use nukes before, does he pop a nuke to just take care of the issue? What if he does to Kiev? What if he does that? What then? Okay? So that sort of scenario is not out of the realm of possibility if Putin feels that his position is threatened and that if the Ruskis continue to lose ground, he is going to feel threatened. So it's all good that the Ukrainians are winning in the east and in the south. But what happens if they win and they clean out the north and the south, take it back, and then Zelensky says, we're going for the Crimea? Now, let me just ask you this. I mean, the Crimea had been taken by Putin in 2014. And it's an interesting story, though, because in 1953, if I'm not mistaken, right after Stalin died, they transferred the Crimean area to the Ukrainians, in part because of the crime Stalin had committed against the Ukraine, where they killed anywhere from 8 to 12 million Kulaks, who were the farmers. And Stalin just decimated that class of people because they needed the food that was being produced there in order to pay for or to feed the population that was going to be used for the industrialization that they needed to catch up on. So the Crimea really hasn't been part of Ukraine except from 1953, from my understanding. So here again, if Zelensky is smart and he's able to take back the East and the South, then it seems to me the status quo ante is what we're looking at, which is essentially the Russians keep the Crimea. They can talk about that down the road. That should not be a showstopper in terms of ending this for a whole lot of reasons. Here again, I get back to one of the fundamental issues I've asked all along. Why can't we get more ballistic missile interceptors on the ground to take care of what the Russians have a great capability, which is to shoot missiles and kill people, which is what they're doing now? You know, this is their new strategy. Well, it's their old strategy, but they're using it now as payback because they've lost some territory. So here again, get back to the Iron Dome question. Are we really trying to get the Israelis to work with us to bring the Iron Dome to Ukraine? I mean, that's the damn solution. So do you agree with me, Lauren?
What did Deke say about that?
Well, Deke agrees with that. But the problem is that the Israelis are co-owners on it because it was co-development. So they have rights as far as this goes. So I think from the Israeli perspective, they want to just kind of steer away from these kinds of issues and not get more people inflamed against them, because the Russians are supportive of the Iranians. The Iranians support Hezbollah and Hamas. And as long as Russia is tied down and as long as the Iranians don't have a lot of cash, then they can't pay their proxy armors, Hezbollah and Hamas. So it makes sense not to stick the your eye in the bears, you know, stick them like that,
right,
and get things going. But on the other hand, you know, there is a case that we can do as much as we can to knock these things down, and I think we should be doing that. So here again, you know, that's part of the good news. Okay. Let me quickly transition to another good news thing on the local level, which is that the ACAP scores came out for our area. Now, here again, understand that last year...
What are ACAP scores?
ACAP is your Alabama Comprehensive Assessment Program, okay? Last year in math, Baldwin County was 32.9 and English language at 57, okay? This year... they went down a little bit to 56 in ELA, but the math went up to 39, okay? So the improvement in math is something that we have taken note of. I've made this point to the Board of Education at least three times in the last 6 months. Jackie Ziegler and I had a good discussion with Dr. Renee Carter about what she's trying to do as the academic dean to bring this, you know, this problem area to a solution. And I think that she's made good progress in laying the groundwork, which did lead to a 6 point or 8 point improvement over the last year. 7 point, 32 to 39.
Okay.
Okay, so you've got this. I mean, they're dealing with various problems, but I do think that they're on the right track with that. So that's something that we need to be able to stay with and keep watching. And I think as long as we do that, we're going to be in better shape with them, okay? It's not going to get an overnight solution, but I think she's got a good plan, and she's worked, she's talked to one of the math gurus that we had as far as our team going forth to get rid of Common Core. Her name is Kathy Miller. Kathy and Dr. Carter have spoken. Carter is now moving in the direction of relearning, you know, how to teach math, like let's do multiplication tables, times tables, all that kind of stuff. You know, back to the basics, I think, is what Dr. Carter is looking at doing.
Very good.
And so we'll see. Election integrity is my last thing, and I will make this very quick. Secretary Merrill is coming to the Common Sense campaign, as I mentioned at the beginning of this. It's at El Rancho at 6 o'clock tonight in Daphne.
Okay. El Rancho.
El
six
Rancho
o'clock
Restaurant.
Tonight.
Okay, 6 o'clock tonight. Everyone's invited. Ask your questions. Be respectful. And I will say this. The last time Secretary Merrill was at one of our meetings, I had to ask someone to leave because of bad behavior. This person kept, you know, trying to talk over an answer. He asked a question, and the secretary was trying to answer the question, and he wouldn't let him. So I had to, you know, ask him to leave. But the point is, election integrity is a fundamental issue. And the degree to which we are rated as the gold standard, okay, that's something that has been questioned. Mike Lindell questioned it. He's got a lawsuit, you know, basically saying that our machines are not capable of not being penetrated, okay? Everyone knows that the Dominion machines were a problem, okay? Dominion, we don't use Dominions. Secretary Merrill's been quite clear about that. But the ones that we do use, Smartomatics, they have software, okay? There are issues about the software being manipulated.
They're not connected to the Internet.
They're not connected to the Internet, okay? There are issues about, you know, in the most recent primary election where there are more voters, more votes than there were voters. And that those are issues that we want to find out about. So all I'm saying to you all is that, you know, if you're interested in this, please come to the meeting tonight. You're invited to have, you know, dinner at 5, and then, you know, the meeting starts at 6. So with that, I did give you some good news.
Yes, you did. Thank
you. Okay. Not a whole lot. I get that. But next week we'll see a little bit more about how things are developing, particularly on the Geary front, because Judge Geary, now my understanding, the Department of Justice has gone forward with an appeal to using the special master. So we'll see how all this works itself out.
Very good.
So with that, let's hope for a little bit of rain this week. God, we had weeks of rain, and now we're into a semi-drought. Let's get a little rain and bring some sunshine to us. Okay?
Very good. Thank you, Dr. Lou.
Take care. Bye.
This is WABF. You've been listening to the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou Campomenosi, Common Sense Campaign and Adjunct Professor of Political Science at Spring Hill College. This program is paid for by Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations in Daphne on 98 and in Malbus on 181 with a state-of-the-art car wash. If you missed part of this program or you'd like to tell a friend, you can listen to it later at WABF1480.com. Now resuming regular programming.